I'm John Batchelor. This is the John Batchelor Show. I welcome my colleague, Professor Stephen F. Cohen, New York University, Princeton University, Russian History Emeritus. EastWestAccord.com is the website to watch for changes in the new Cold War. Breaking news from Vladivostok. That's in the far east of the former Soviet, now Russian Federation. John Huntsman is the American ambassador to Russia, to the Russian Federation. And speaking at a media event roundtable in Vladivostok, Ambassador Huntsman said, "My president," meaning President Trump, "has said repeatedly that he wants a better relationship with Russia." Repeatedly. And he has said quite clearly that he would like to engage personally with President Putin. You can call it a desire for detente or a desire for a healthier relationship. That is, within these last hours, a statement that is consistent with the discord that we've seen these last days following an announcement by the ambassador to the United Nations, Nikki Haley, a prominent figure in the Trump administration these last 14 months, saying that there would be a new round of sanctions against Russia, this to do with the Syrian chemical weapons attack and the response by the United States and France and the United Kingdom. However, soon after that, there were qualifications about new rounds of sanctions. And as of now, the U.S. Treasury, as of Monday, the U.S. Treasury has in an unexpected move, eased sanctions imposed on aluminum giant United Company Rusal, which the Kremlin expressed a caution would be a sign of better ties. This is from a Kremlin spokesman, Dmitry Peskov. So there's contradiction here. The ambassador to the to Russia says that the president wants better ties. The ambassador to the United Nations says there will be a new round of sanctions. And now the U.S. Treasury, Mr. Mnuchin, has eased sanctions on an aluminum company in Russia. Steve, a very good evening to you. And I want to add one more discordant note from these last days before we discuss criminalizing Russia, which is the nature of those sanctions. Mikhail Khodorkovsky, who was jailed for many years by Vladimir Putin and the Kremlin for what was said to be income tax invasion and chicanery with regard the very large Russian energy company that he ran for some years. Mikhail Khodorkovsky has written in these last days an article for the Wall Street Journal editorial page, which I brought to your attention when it was published. And you responded in kind, so I would like to draw you out on these remarks tonight. However, Khodorkovsky writes that the real enemy is not the Russian people, not even the Russian apparatus. It's 100 Russians whom he identifies as key beneficiaries of the Putin regime. He says they come mostly from the criminal underworld of St. Petersburg. He says that that group is driving the new Cold War and the aggression in Ukraine and Syria and all the bad acting along the Russian frontier. He calls them a band of criminals, and that their policies are not to strengthen Russia, not to build buffer states, not to reclaim Ukraine or parts of Ukraine in order to ensure the Black Sea Fleet. No, he says their goal is to, quote, steal money and avoid accountability by holding on to power. He says they have a worldwide net that they're operating in, not just in one city, Petersburg, or not just in one country, Russia. So there we have it. The president of the United States, through his spokesman, the ambassador to the Russia, says that he wants better relations with Russia and with Putin personally. And Khodorkovsky, who is now president of the Open Society and writing for the Wall Street Journal, says that what Russia is today is in the hands of a criminal regime. Good evening to you, Professor.
So I have two only semi-ironic responses to both statements. Ambassador Huntsman had to go about as far as you can go from Washington, D.C. to Vladivostok to say that Trump wants detente. That's pretty remarkable statement. I assume he was acting on instructions. So you got to hand it to Trump. He's not letting go of the idea, but Huntsman didn't exactly make the statement in Washington or even in Moscow. The Khodorkovsky thing is somewhere between self-parody and just plain silly. If there was ever a mafia state in Russia, and there isn't today. And if there isn't today, it's because Putin ended it after he came to power in 2000. But if you say at one point there was something approaching a mafia state, that is when a group of powerful men were plundering the state and the people illegally and doing it without regard for the rule of law, even with murders, tough tactics. If that was the case, Hordakovsky, the man who is deploring the mafia state in the Wall Street Journal, was probably number one among those men in the 1990s. So I don't know how he could write such a thing, because he incriminates himself. But it's all part of this criminalizing of Russia that's coming from all quarters. What strikes me, John, is how different this is from what appeared in mainstream politics and media during the last Cold War, certainly when I encountered it fully in the 70s and 80s. Communist Soviet Russia was loathed, disliked, primarily for ideological reasons in this country. But there was, at least in the mainstream, there were always fringe groups, no suggestion that it was a criminal state or a mafia state, which implies we should have nothing to do with it, except perhaps in terms of war. And that's what worries me the most now, that we learned lessons that helped us survive the last Cold War that involved cooperation, or what Ambassador Huntsman seems to have called détente, in order to avoid the perils of war, which could have meant nuclear war. But those lessons are gone now. I think the demonization or criminalization of Russia actually began more than 10 years ago, when it focused on Putin as a kind of demon leader, and then that was extrapolated to Russia. But it has really become a tsunami of accusations and allegations in the United States since what's called Russiagate began. And that's now nearly 2 years. Because what's happening when you read the press reports of various investigations or editorials or so-called media breaks is that the very idea of contacts, they use this word, with Russia, or associations, professional, political, cultural, I guess even academic, with anyone who's, quote, I use this expression, linked to the Kremlin, is criminal. But what does linked to the Kremlin mean? First of all, the Russian government is not in the Kremlin. It's elsewhere, headed not by Putin, but by the Prime Minister, Dmitry Medvedev. But this accusation that there's something suspicious and criminal with any contact, political, financial, cultural, academic, economic, with Russians, implies that they are criminals, and therefore relationships by Americans with these people are criminal. Now, some people have outright said that, but it's becoming a kind of truth in Washington, in mainstream politics. Consider briefly, you didn't read it in your news report, but it's pretty remarkable, partly because it's so silly, but it's a sign of the times, that the Democratic National Committee, you know this, John, has filed a lawsuit.
Oh, I didn't mention it, Steve. I didn't think that it... All right, well, we're going to pay attention to it. It was frivolous nonsense, but it did get headlines, yes.
Well, but it documents my argument that a criminalization of Russia as a state is underway. So the Democratic National Committee has filed officially somewhere in some court a lawsuit suing Russia and the Trump campaign, but above all Russia, it's suing Russia. I don't even know that you can do that in an American court, but it's suing Russia for having cost Hillary Clinton the presidential election. It's silly. It's a Saturday Night Live skit, potentially, but it tells us something profoundly distressing, and that is this criminalization of Russia as a state. And the Democrats go on to say that what Russia did, and remember, I'm talking about during the American presidential election, the mantra has become Russia attacked America. That's said over and over again. The Democratic National Committee in its lawsuit ups that and calls it an act of unprecedented treachery. Unprecedented treachery. So we now have superseded Pearl Harbor. We've superseded 9/11, an act of treachery. And obviously only a criminal state could do that. The other implication is that Russia has no legitimate national interests. Now, this was a struggle that was fought during the preceding Cold War by advocates of détente, which took the view that, look, we may not like Soviet Russia, communist Russia, but by it's a great power, and by any rules of international politics, it has legitimate national interest. For example, it doesn't want any bases on it, military bases on its border, or it wants, it retains the right to have parity in nuclear weapons and the rest. All that was accepted. And that led to all the negotiations and treaties we had of cooperation during the 40-year Cold War. That's gone. Because if Russia is a criminal state or a mafia state, then it has no legitimate, that is legal, authentic national interest anywhere, not even at home, but certainly not abroad. And if this assumption is acted on, and people in high policy circles in Washington seem to want to act on it, this would rule out any relations
right
between the United States and
right,
Russia.
Right. And Elliot Ness cannot make peace with Frank Nitti. I understand that. Now, just a moment, Steve. We'll continue. Professor Stephen F. Cohen, New York University, Princeton University. We're discussing the criminalization of the power of Russia. I'm John Batchelor. This is The John Batchelor Show.
When it comes to your health, brushing your teeth is one of the most important parts of your day. Quip knows that. That's why they've combined dentistry and design to make a better electric toothbrush. Quip is the new electric toothbrush that packs just the right amount of vibrations into a slimmer design at a fraction of the cost of bulkier traditional electric brushes. And because the thing that cleans your mouth should also be clean, Quip's subscription plan refreshes your brush on a dentist-recommended schedule, delivering new brush heads every 3 months for just $5, including free shipping worldwide. Quip starts at just $25, and if you go to getquip.com/John, J-O-H-N, right now, you'll get your first refill pack free with a Quip electric toothbrush. That's your first refill pack free at getquip.com/John, spelled GETQIP.com/John. That's your first refill pack free at getquip.com/John, spelled GETQIP.com/John.
I'm John Batchelor. This is The John Batchelor Show, continuing with Professor Stephen F. Cohen, New York University, Princeton University, discussing the criminalizing of Russia, the power of Russia, a great state for about 1,000 years, and why that is unwise, why it did not work in the first Cold War and there was treatment of Russia as an equal, and why in the second Cold War that is necessary. As Ambassador Huntsman indicates, President Trump wants to renew better relations with Russia. And why? Steve, please continue. Why didn't we criminalize Russia, the communist aggressor who was undermining everything in America? Why didn't we criminalize it in the 20th century? And what can go wrong if we do the same in the 21st?
Actually, there's a literature on that question. I was looking through it the other day. Why, when, how did the recognition that there had to be, I think Khrushchev invented the term, the Soviet leader, but it was embraced by the West. Why was it necessary to live with peaceful coexistence? You remember that term?
Yes.
We hardly hear, I have sort of forgotten it, to tell you the truth, until I was thinking about it the other day, that faced with the power and the fearful ideology, as it was thought to be, communism of Soviet Russia, nonetheless, this concept that we have existential reasons, they being nuclear weapons and others, to learn to get along and coexist. I think that came after the Cuban Missile Crisis of 1962. As I looked through the history books, it was then that it dawned on not only the American political class, but on the Soviet political class, because Khrushchev had done something reckless in attempting to put the missiles in Cuba, that that kind of walking on the razor's edge had to be avoided at all costs. That gave rise to the idea of cooperation. That gave rise to the idea of detente. That gave rise to the idea of nuclear arms reductions and controls. That gave rise to the multiple academic and cultural exchanges between American and Soviet citizens that unfolded in the 60s, 70s, and 80s. I was a beneficiary of one of those exchanges, going to on academic exchanges and living there for prolonged periods of time. And out of that came this essential idea that it's necessary to cooperate in order to coexist. And that was lost. It's been lost. I think it began, maybe I made this point before, but let me make it again, more than 10 years ago, when the mainstream in the United States began to demonize Putin. And that demonization of Putin gradually extended to the Kremlin, and that gradually extended to Russia. So we get where we are today, as I've already mentioned, that Russia is regarded as a criminal state. And that would seem to exclude cooperation. It seems to me that these are truths, the necessity of cooperation that we've forgotten, and it's worth us running through why it is necessary, why Russia matters, why cooperation is essential. Like the United States, Russia possesses enormous quantities of weapons of mass destruction, not only nuclear ones. Without cooperation in this realm, a constant process not only of arms control, but of nuclear safeguards, of conduct, codes of conduct, how both sides must behave to avoid even nearing the precipice of war, which could mean a nuclear war. Without that kind of understanding, we are in very, very bad trouble. So, Washington, the Center for the National Interest. Do you know that one, John?
No, I don't. Yes, I know what it is. Yes, yes.
Yeah, headed by Dmitry Symes.
Right.
Has people from the other side. But they held a meeting, and they had four or five, I think, really widely respected experts on the military relationship with Russia. And the person who was chairing the committee, the meeting, to provoke responses, asked a question. With war being a certainty, where would you rank our relations with Russia today in terms of the likelihood of war? 10 being absolute certainty. So I read this stenogram or this report on the meeting, and the average response was between 5 and 7.
Wow.
Yeah, I was really struck, because you always think that in Washington, these guys have seen it all, done it all. They don't get excited. It's only Batzler and Cohen who are really worried.
Right, right. It's just for the consumption of the TV audience. It's not real. That's right. What you assume.
But these guys are really mainstream, widely respected, get to publish in the New York Times and the Washington Post, Washington policy intellectuals. And the lowest, most optimistic, thought that on a scale of 1 to 10, 5, 50% chance we're headed to war with Russia. The more pessimistic ones thought we were already at 7.
All right, just a moment, Professor. We'll continue with the threat. Professor Cohen, I'm John Batchelor.